Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome you to On Point. I'm your host, Don Allen, with my co-host, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards, and we have more controversy surrounding the Council on Black Minnesotans, and we'll get to that a little bit later. Hey, Mr. Edwards, how are you?
Fine. Don, on a beautiful winter's day here in the Twin Cities, looking out from the studio. Temperature's 36 degrees here in the Northern Hemisphere for our international audience, if you will, and our domestic audience in the southern part of the United States. Bright day. Temperature's going to be going up for a while, kind of lure us into a false sense of weather security, if you will. We'll probably get a 14 or 15-inch snowstorm sometime in mid-March. But anyways, hey, it's a beautiful day. I mean, what the heck? Things are going on. A lot of questions still unanswered in our beloved enclave. But right now, Mr. Allen, the world's attention turned to Africa. People keep saying the Middle East. Last time I looked at the map, Egypt is in Africa. You know what I mean?
Yes, it is.
But they keep talking in terms of the Middle East. But the Middle East is Jordan and Israel and Iraq and Iran and Syria, Turkey. You know, that's the Middle East. But anyways, hey, what the heck? We didn't draw the maps. You know, the European colonial masters did that. But anyways, a lot of analysis going on right now with respect to the departure of Hosni Mubarak, the strongman slash president for life of Egypt. After about 30 years, Hosni Mubarak reversed himself 13 hours after indicating he had no intention of going anywhere, and decided to retire to his palatial estate in the resort city there in the south of the Sinai along the Red Sea, where he certainly will enjoy the remainder of his days. I'm imagining he and his family will probably leave for some other place, probably Saudi Arabia or et cetera, but he's going to leave pretty well endowed. Experts now saying that he has in bank accounts in the United States, Don, Europe, Switzerland, and et cetera, maybe in excess of $80 billion. So, you know, he rewarded himself well. Here's the only problem is that basically what happened, the rebellion, the uprising, the revolution, however you want to phrase it, deposed a single dictator, and in its place is eight or nine, depending on what the number of the Supreme Council is. The military, in other words, has taken over, though technically Egypt has been a military dictatorship since 1952, when then King Farouk was ousted by Gamal Nasser, who later passed from this life, was succeeded by Anwar Sadat, who was assassinated in a situation that still raises questions in some parts of the world about the role of the United States. And, in fact, on the day that Anwar Sadat was assassinated, Hosni Mubarak, who was the vice president at that time, was sitting right next to him, allegedly was slightly wounded. Some have always maintained that Hosni Mubarak had a lot to do with the assassination of Anwar Sadat, who he succeeded, as well as questions about the fact that at the time of the assassination of Anwar Sadat, Hosni Mubarak was an agent of the CIA, and I think is the reason he has been the longtime friend. A lot of nervousness, some say, in the Middle East. Some maintain that Syria, that Jordan, they don't say as much about Libya. I think Muammar Gaddafi has his hands around what he needs to have his hands around, but certainly Algiers, if you will, maybe even Morocco. Tunisia went under a couple weeks before, and then certainly Saudi Arabia though I think that the oil sheiks there have enough money to keep the people pacified. The key, though, is Israel. And really what happened is that Hosni Mubarak had really been America's proxy in protecting Israel, maintaining peace in the Middle East. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the coming months, particularly if the Muslim Brotherhood turns out to be stronger than some have anticipated, and you get an Islamic flavor to what has traditionally been a sectarian kind of or secular government, if you will. And so the Israelis are extremely concerned and nervous. The Israelis in the United States do not want to expose Israel's nuclear capabilities. And it's certainly one of the reasons why there is so much consternation about Iran developing a nuclear weapon. And so that's at play tonight. The Western commentators, particularly your cable networks here in the United States and the BBC in England, patting themselves on the back, indicating that they had a tremendous amount to do with this revolution. A lot of talk about the Internet. I know that some of you, Don, who play with the little gadgets, can have appreciation about the Blackberries and things like that. Of course, in places like China and Iran, the government just shut all that off. It's an interesting situation. We'll certainly be hearing a lot more about it. It'll be interesting a year from now what Egypt looks like. Democracy is a grueling process, if you will, and particularly for a country that, number one, doesn't have oil, has significant unemployment, and really doesn't have a plan for a new economic future, in other words, economic growth. So that means, Don, a lot of jobs are going to be resourced out of the United States to Egypt. So you're going to be seeing more things that say, made in Egypt.
Wonderful. That's just great.
And I don't know what that means for Black America, but it probably means less employment opportunity. Hate to say it like that. You know, I really, you know, want to be on the bandwagon with democracy and new democratic institutions in Egypt and et cetera. But the fact of the matter is Egypt does not have oil, doesn't have the economic base. That means we have to, quote unquote, turn it into an American version of an American economic proxy. So that means there'll be outsourcing of American jobs to Egypt. All right.
Oh, exactly.
That's what we have. Okay.
And I'd like to tell all our listeners today that this was dubbed as the Black History Special, but we want people from all walks of life to give us a call today if they have any opinions, any comments, any suggestions. But I don't mean to start this out but on a bad note, but for our international and domestic listeners, our local station here, KSTP Channel 5, which is an ABC affiliate, reported on today that alleged racial attack could cost a Minnesota man his eye. A man who's claimed to be beaten at a bar in Brainerd because he was Black, the assault may cost him his eye. 53-year-old Willie Navy says he was at a bar near Clothing Time when on February 6th when a white man called him the N-word and another knocked him out with a blow to the back of his head. Navy says his eye will need multiple surgeries and the prognosis is unclear. He says the attack shows that race relations haven't changed since the 1950s, and that was brought to Channel 5 by the Brainerd Dispatch. The local pizza restaurant and bar that he was in will donate a portion of this Tuesday's sales to Navy's medical bills. Well, what do we think about that, Mr. Edwards?
Well, it's not surprising. I noticed that you had to pull that off of KSTP Channel 5, if I understand, because the Minneapolis Star Tribune, again, chose not to write about any aspect of that. Brainerd, Minnesota is about 100 miles north of us. It's up in resort country. People are encouraged, Black and white allegedly are encouraged to come up, particularly in the wintertime, though they have a lot of activities in the winter, but particularly in the summertime, to come up and enjoy the lakes, the golf courses, just the outdoor recreation, and et cetera. There is always, Mr. Allen, and it's ironic that it comes at Black History, because a part of Black History is the first and really only successful Black resort in the history of the state of Minnesota, originated in Brainerd,
yes.
Minnesota. It was put together by an African-American female. It was a very popular spot for about 20 years, back at the turn of the last century and et cetera. There's always been a small Black population in the Brainerd area, if you will. And, of course, there's always been these kinds of problems. But basically what has happened, because the numbers of African-Americans are so small, you're really not seen as a threat. Unless Billy Bob's been drinking a little bit, and he's maybe talking a little bit about Barack Obama and those people and et cetera. And,
yeah.
You know, and yeah. The question always comes up, you know, what are you doing in here, okay?
Yeah.
And then, of course, that led to the N-word and et cetera. But, you know, the sucker punch beat him as bad as they beat him, because it was not just a single blow to the back of the head, which knocked him out. They stomped on him, according to the police reports. It's nice to see the pizza place that this incident happened in and at least feel some responsibility to try to help with his medical cost. But, you know, Willie will never, he'll never be right. And we really don't know the full extent of his injury, because he was beaten other places around his body. But I'm not surprised, Don. I have to say, I've of course lived in this state since 1945. I know that there are areas of the state where you've got to be—I hate to say it like this—you got to be on, you got to be on guard, you know. And sometimes, contrary to what folks like to say, when old Billy Bob gets to drinking that suds, if you will, etc., maybe it's time for you to move on.
Yes. I'd like to say something about Mr. Navy. Mr. Navy was a longtime real estate owner in South Minneapolis, right on the corner of 37th and 38th and Portland Avenue South, like from the late early 80s to the late 90s.
I can well remember him. That's who he was. Okay.
And he was a veteran and spent a lot of time
United States Armed Services?
Yes, he was. He was the Army. Yes, Army man.
Yeah.
I didn't know Mr. Navy well. And so, with that said, Mr. Edwards, we have.
Let me just say this, if you could, on behalf of Mr. Navy and his family and loved ones. If I remember correctly, he had some real estate relationships with the late real estate mogul and former NAACP president Hobart Mitchell Jr. and his father, Hobart Mitchell Sr. Now it comes to me. I well remember them involved in some real estate activities along that area. Yeah.
Yes, 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 exactly. And we have a special guest here. We invited one of my other mentors besides Mr. Edwards, Mr. Larry Tucker, to join us today on Point, because we're to talk about some things, and you know we could have to go back in history and talk about some stuff in history and then some current stuff today. But I'd like to welcome Mr. Tucker, Mr. Larry Tucker.
Are you here, Mr. Okay.
Yes, I am. Tucker, how you doing?
Yes,
good afternoon.
Great.
Go ahead, Mr. Allen. Lay it on out.
Okay. Well, let's just start with this. Let's start with something current. We were fortunate enough, all three of us, Mr. Larry Tucker, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards, and myself, to attend a meeting earlier this last week with the Northside Transportation Network.
This week, yes,
with the Northside Transportation Network. And what Northside Transportation Network is an ad hoc group of individuals that have decided that they are going to put on some dog and pony shows and repeat things they were telling to us the week before, the month before, and even a year before. So what I'd like to do is start out by getting Mr. Tucker's insight, and then we all can chime in about this particular meeting and what happened and what is the nucleus or the origin for these folks to keep repeating the same thing and not working through a process. So with that said, Mr. Tucker, your thoughts on that particular meeting we all attended?
Well, the city of Minneapolis is in the process of developing a light rail system.
Yes.
Bringing people from suburbia to the sports facilities in downtown Minneapolis. And the big concern is that what route will this light rail travel. There's some that wanted to go through the African-American community, and there's others who are adamant that it does not go through the African-American community. My concern is that there is a failure to properly, for the groups that are involved, to express the fact that the residents of North Minneapolis have no say are limited, say, and only being considered as an advisory group as to where this light rail will go. And failure is a historical fact. Failure to properly inform the community as to this fact, i.e., you don't have any say as to where this light rail will go, period. Mm-hmm. Others in suburbia and other parts of the city has expressed in some very strong terms, some of which I will not repeat, that they are adamantly against the light rail going down a major street in North Minneapolis. The biggest concern, and it's a historical concern, is that there are people that come into our wonderful community and pretend as though that they're our friends. They're wolves in sheep clothes, trying to convince us that they have some concern about our well-being. And they're only there to foster their own well-being, and they're only there to give us false information, if anything. And so I, in attending those meetings, which many times I refuse to do, but there's just nothing, and many people in our community have refused to attend these meetings because they found them to be such bogus meetings. Okay. And I'm always reminded of what Whitney Young at the Urban League used to say years ago, always follow the money, number one, and see who benefits. When these decisions are made in our community, see who benefits. And the people that are pushing to get the light rail to go down the middle of the African-American community are architects and developers who have bought up and are buying up property on this wonderful street in hopes to capitalize on this fact that they capitalize on the fact if the light rail goes down Penn Avenue that they will have some economic benefit.
Wow. All right. Mr. Edwards.
Well, no, I think Mr. Tucker to continue right on because his information and insight is excellent. One thing we need to make sure we do for transparency for those that may be upset that we're having this kind of discussion because, as you said, Mr. Allen, at the opening, 57 weeks ago, we had the first of a series of dog and pony shows. And, in fact, over 200 people were in attendance at UROC in North Minneapolis, University of Minnesota's research facility. That was 57 weeks ago. And one of the things I was, taken back with and continue to be taken back with is that we keep hearing the same rhetoric. But the one thing that we don't hear and that it was clear in this meeting this past week, this past Tuesday, that many of the individuals, it was both black and white, there's always a small cadre of African Americans, were very annoyed when both yourself, Mr. Tucker, joined you, when we talked about jobs for the African American. And I just sensed as if we were talking about supporting Al Qaeda or something like that, you know what I'm saying? Mr. Tucker, can you kind of give us your thinking on why the resistance to providing jobs for the African-American community?
Oh, well, my feeling is that when you talk about jobs and money, that you're talking about areas outside of their expertise. And I think the biggest problem is that they don't know. They don't know. We have what we call, from a historical perspective, we still have a large number of accommodationists.
Okay.
People who just want to make certain people feel comfortable.
Okay.
And they want the powers to be to feel comfortable. They're not folk or people who understand economic development. They don't understand money. They don't understand dollars. And they don't understand jobs. And they're culturally conservative. Culturally conservative. People may find this interesting, but we have a lot of African Americans who feel that the only ones that should receive any kind of credence is them.
Okay.
And if you don't have a PhD or a reasonable facsimile thereof, you're not to be respected.
Okay.
The tragedy
okay.
with all of that, there's nothing in the United States Constitution that states that you need a PhD in order to enjoy the privileges of our country. And
okay.
I think we have a lot of people who don't understand that a PhD is not a prerequisite in order to enjoy the privileges of the Constitution of the United States. And I think we have a lot.
Mr. Tucker, this comes at a peculiar time for us here in the Twin Cities, again, particularly for both our domestic and international audience. We've had, unfortunately, in this land of paradise, the land of Hubert Humphrey, if you will, now the land of Franken and Klobuchar and R.T. Rybak and such. We've had two studies. These are studies done by important institutions and entities. Not a bunch of, you know, you've heard me say this before, not a bunch of colored guys standing out on the corner on Plymouth Avenue. One of the studies was done in 07 by the University of Minnesota, done by a young African-American research professional, impeccable academic credentials, and would she, and this was driven by former District Court Judge LeJune Lang, who has had a long and beautiful history here of fighting for civil rights. And that study in 07 showed that there was significant disparity and et cetera, and basically the mayor and them and the city council received it, thanked the young lady and Judge Lang for their efforts, if you will, and kind of moved on. And then, lo and behold, this past October of 2010, a report that cost $500,000 came out, and it really reaffirmed what was said in 07, and it talked in terms of the disparity and the level of disparity, the abuse of the African-American community by government entities, starting with the city of Minneapolis and et cetera. And I've detected that there has been a decision that's not to be talked about either. Is this a part of what you're talking about, sir, that there are, even within our own beloved African-American community, there are factions who maintain that we just need to be able to be accommodationist, and we need just to get along, and that these things should not be talked about?
Well, there's a certain segment who feels as though that only some of us, some of us are worthy of certain kinds of respect.
Okay.
And others, no matter who they others are, not worthy of the same respect. I'm always reminded of this famous baseball player we have here in our country called Willie Mays. And
okay.
He was revered when he was on the field at Candlestick Park in a little city called San Francisco.
Right.
But when he left the stadium and went down Market Street, he reported one day that he was called the N-word repeatedly.
Right. Okay.
So sometimes you get certain kinds of treatment in certain kinds of places, but yet still you're always reminded of your origin. And I just think there's a lot of us who feel as though it's okay to treat Mr. Tucker or Mr. Edwards in a certain way because they are considered inconsequential.
Okay.
And if we don't feel as though they have the level of sophistication, we don't feel as though they're worthy of any kind of proper treatment from anybody. So it's okay to treat them in a disparaging manner. But it's not okay to treat the accommodationists in a disparaging manner. And when the accommodationists are attacked or someone from their ilk is attacked, then everybody should come to their rescue.
Okay. Mr. Tucker, and this is a part of our Black History celebration in the month of Mr. Tucker, and he didn't have any idea I was getting ready to come with this. But it's ironic that he talked about Willie Mays. And I grew up just loving Willie Mays, but I had the pleasure as a young 13-year-old Negro to have personally met Willie Mays here in Minneapolis for a very short period of time. I think it was 18 games. Willie Mays played for the old Minneapolis Millers of the old American Association before he was called up to then the New York Giants. That's before they came west. And one of the reasons that Willie Mays was in our neighborhood, if you will, over on Royalston, was because in 1951, Negroes could not really stay at hotels downtown. And so the policy, and really Willie Mays was only the second Negro to really play for the Minneapolis Millers back in those days. And so what happened is the Minneapolis Millers and the New York Giants sought out Negro leadership here to find a nice rooming house for Willie. And he lived and stayed for about a month and a quarter, at 93 Royalston Avenue in Minneapolis, which is now a part of the freeway or the 55. It's right across from where American Linen is. Whoops. But it's interesting, Mr. Tucker, that you would raise the question about Willie Mays, because there's a historical piece there. I mean, and I know the average and the accommodationists and et cetera would say they couldn't even believe or accept that there was conditions here in Minneapolis as early as or as late, or however you want to put it, as 1951, 1950, 1952, that Negroes were not welcome and could not find accommodations at our major white downtown hotels. And the example of Willie Mays, who became one of the greatest ball players in the history of America, was a glowing example of that. Appreciate you raising the question about Willie Mays. 93 Royalston was where he stayed. He rented a room there. Of course, we in the neighborhood, all those little young Negroes, if you will, were just elated because there was at least one occasion he played a little stickball in the street with us.
Oh, wow. That yeah. sounds great. Sounds
Thank you,
fun.
Mr. Tucker. Go ahead.
Yeah.
But the accommodationist factor and those so-called civil rights people, and I think that's a horrible term to use to reference most African Americans. I'm reminded of a minister here in town who showed pictures of a young lady talking about her involvement in the civil rights movement, and he reminded me that she was so young that when the civil rights movement was going on, her mother said, "Don't you go down there with that King fella and get us in trouble. You stay home." And he said she was under the porch playing with mud paws in a mud pan. And now she claims she was a major force in the civil rights movement. And we take a look at that and just chuckle. There wasn't 20 people in my hometown that was actually involved in the civil rights movement. 20 people, there was that many. It's almost like Al-Qaeda. You don't need 2,000 people to make change, and I think some of us forget that. You only need a handful. The same thing happened in Egypt. You don't need the 2,000 people came out when they found it was safe to come out or that they managed to come out, but there wasn't a whole bunch of people that started the movement, and there never is and never was and probably never will be.
Now, Mr. Tucker, if I'm not mistaken, your hometown is Omaha, Nebraska. Is that correct?
Correct.
And in that town resides probably one of the great political and social minds of the day, Ernie Chambers. Could you just give us a little enlightenment about your own city of Omaha down there and its history?
Yeah, Omaha has an interesting history because there's a guy named Malcolm X that was born in Omaha. And he lived approximately two blocks away from where my grandmother lived, or the neighborhood in which I was born in. And I'd asked her about Malcolm and his dad, and she had some interesting anecdotal information and statements that I just won't repeat at this time, but it was extremely interesting. They were extremely bright family, the Littles were.
The Littles, yes.
And
yes,
as Ernie stayed in the legislature for approximately 34 years, and he controlled it. One man.
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm. Controlled it. For over 33 years, because they kicked him out on the 34th. He controlled it because...
What, did you go to term limits?
Yes, they finally enacted term limits, and as such, they kicked him out. But he controlled it based on his intellect.
Yeah.
Nobody would ever challenge him because he was so well prepared. So well prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And that he controlled the legislature, so they just got tired of him and said, well, we finally got to get rid of him. When they finally enacted term limitations, he was booted out.
Okay.
But he was extremely creative, did his homework, researched everything to depth, and was maybe not well-liked, but he was well-respected.
Okay. What has been, Mr. Tucker, as part of our Black History piece, what has been your assessment? You've heard Mr. Allen and myself talking for the last number of weeks about what seems to be the implosion, if you will, of the Council on Black Minnesotans. And, of course, you've been active in our community for many years and et cetera. What, where are we at with respect to our organizations that traditionally the Negro community has looked to as a quote unquote a catalyst, if you will, as a battering ram to address our concerns and obstructions and obstacles that we face. Where are we at right now?
I think we're where Dr. King said. Dr. King, when he was attending this wonderful school called Morehouse, he said a lot of his fellow students came to school to get a degree to only to lord over the community. He also stated that, I think it was Governor Talmadge at that time, which he quoted, there's no more dangerous of a man than a man with the ability to reason but without a moral compass.
Wow.
And I think what you have at the Council of Blacks of Minnesota is you have the accommodationists who just want to lord over the African-American community. And they haven't trained themselves, as Dr. King said. They have no training. They just wake up one morning and says, I'm going to be a leader.
Okay.
And I think the accommodationists really haven't even read the charter of the Council of Black Minnesota, which is, says, in fact, the Council of Black Minnesota is designed to enhance the economic development of the African-American community. That's their charter. That's a part of their goal. There is nobody in that group have ever run a shoeshine stand, never had a lemonade stand.
Okay.
How are they going to do that?
Well, let me ask you this. What do you see as the future? Because this, we now have conservative, well, we've always had conservative government as it pertains to the rights of the sons and daughters of the African, but we have a conservative juggernaut now, a position, at least in the legislature. We have a governor who is maybe a moderate, I think, on civil rights issues. But what do you think is the future of the council?
The future of the council will probably remain as it is because they are no consequence.
Okay.
If one was thinking that they were of consequence, then I would say, hey, they would be gone. As long as they don't do nothing, keep them there.
Okay.
I mean, it sounds cynical, but they're harmless.
Well, the reason I asked this question, there was a madness to the reason of the asking question. A couple nights ago, A committee of the Minnesota House, chaired by Representative Cornish of Thunder, Minnesota, that's actually the name of the town that is central to the district it sits in. We're getting ready to enact, gentlemen, as you probably know, a new piece of legislation in which we will be talking in terms of putting little children as young as 10 years old. In the adult system, we will certify them as adults. Currently, Minnesota law is 14. What basically our conservatives have said is that because of the Negro problem here in Minnesota, gangs and et cetera, and an interesting article in this morning's edition of the paper, that we need to downsize and get more young, particularly African-Americans, into the criminal justice system. And so Representative Cornish and his friends used a tragedy that happened in Fergus Falls, Minnesota, in 2006, and it's called Emily's Law. You know, the folks are great at giving names based on victims. And what they have basically said is they intend to pass this legislation, and, you know, the African-American community here in Minnesota needs to realize that the system now will be processing as young as 10 years old, African Americans and others, but because of the way the system works, the majority of people that always wind up incarcerated are us, that we will be, they will be looking at a new, quote unquote, significant number and platform of young African Americans. Now, interesting enough, a lot of prosecutors and child protection people have said that this is the wrong legislation for the wrong time. Representative Cornish and his colleagues on the Republican side said it doesn't make any difference. And in fact, they started referring to the little colored children as Johnnies, little Johnnies, if you will, that we need to get these little Johnnies off the street, and et cetera. Now, one of the things that was, that happened present at the hearing the other night, I'm told, was Lester Collins, the longtime director. In fact, he's been the only director of the Council on Black Minnesotans. But he apparently did not have a strategy to testify, nor had he alerted the community, because what I'm understanding you to say, Mr. Tucker, which is actually correct, the Council on Black Minnesotans should have held a public hearing in January to have gotten input and to rally our community. Would you not agree?
Well, you know, my reaction is that you can't get an apple off a pear tree.
Okay.
And Lester's a nice guy, but maybe he's been there too long. And if he had any fire, it's gone, and his flag is torn and tattered, and maybe he's just smothering over there in the woods by himself.
There's a
move afoot to put some structure in those committees. There's a lot of them. Put term limits in there. Make sure that people who sit on those boards bring to those boards the background necessary to carry out the function of the board.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, as his disciples, had consequential individuals as disciples, tax collectors, businessmen, and other persons.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot have people sitting on these boards of no consequences and doing it just for their own social gratification, and it becomes a social environment, and they're there for whatever social gratification they can get.
Okay.
I think the move afoot now is to require that there be term limits for folks like the present council person, and you put in other kinds of strategy, and you put certain qualifications for board members. So you change the structure of the organization versus attacking, you know, Mr.
Collins.
Mm-hmm. You just change the structure of the organization.
And then he'll go away.
You know, he'll have to go away because he no longer fits the criteria that the organization has established for itself. So, you know, that's what I had suggested that people do, and I think that that will solve our problem as relates to Mr. Collins because I just think he's outlived his usefulness at this time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mr. Allen, go ahead. You can wrap it up. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to agree with that. Since we're still talking about the Council of Minnesotans, I'd like to bring everybody up to speed. Earlier this week, I received an email from Ms. Martha Holton Dimmick, who is the Assistant City of Minneapolis Attorney, who wrote me an email that says, "I will be consulting with an attorney regarding the libelous statement you made about me on your blog. It is not true. There is no complaint against me of any kind." And so this is in reference to an incident that happened Tuesday night at 2233 University Avenue at 2000 in military times. What is that in military times? 2000 hours? Or, yeah.
10 o'clock.
Yeah, 10 o'clock. And
9 o'clock. But
9 o'clock,
And so
to Ms. Martha Holton Dimmick, in front of me, I hold a St. Paul Police Report, original offense incident report, that has the word complaint. Filed by Ms. Rosella of Woodbury, and the other person involved was Martha Holton Dimmick, Minnesota. It was filed, like I said, at 9 o'clock on the 8th, and it was in regards to an incident happening at 2233 University. So as much as she wants to go out publicly and say that there was no complaint filed against her or in general, I've actually listed a copy of that complaint up on the Independent Business News Network for everyone to see. And I just want to let everybody know, again, our number to call is let me go back.
Yeah, we haven't given the number.
877-572-4288. That toll-free number is 877-572-4288. Now, Mr. Edwards, I like doing this. I started doing this a couple of days ago. And Mr. Tucker,
mm-hmm.
We got a Mission Impossible moment. Okay? Let that play for a few seconds. Yeah. We'll let that just kind of roll out here. Again, The Independent Business News Network, On Point, and the National Research Institute have received a 5 paragraph email from an employee of the African American Family Services. And for our national, international listeners and domestic, I need to explain this. One of the board members that sit on the Council on Black Minnesotans is also the executive director here of African American Family Services. And we had repeatedly asked the Council on Black Minnesotans about the $1.8 million in tobacco money, which came from the Blue Cross, Clearway, Minnesota, the Minnesota Department of Health, and was distributed between for research from the Minneapolis Urban League, the African American Family Service, Breaking Free, SABAFME, and also the Minnesota African American Tobacco Education Network. We have yet to get any answers back, and the answers that we do get is this report doesn't exist, and we never got the money. So this report was actually generated out of the the Council on Black Minnesotans. So with that said, I received an email from a former employee of the African American Family Services that I am actually going to publish because it's like 5 paragraphs long or 6 paragraphs long, and I don't want to get into the whole thing because this is going to be a national research and IBNN and On Point exclusive. But one of the things in here, the young lady who writes the email says that she's talking about the executive director of African American Family Services, which I don't have to mention her name because we all know who this person is. The young lady says she used me to win a settlement with Ramsey County, and when she got her money, she viciously attacked me and let me go. Her and another woman told me if I lied to Ramsey County or if they contacted me, it would be okay. She lied about me to her lawyers getting involved in a fight for me, and it was not. And I had to obtain my own lawyer. I am sorry I allowed myself to be deceived by that corrupt woman. I wish I'd known her better. I wish Ramsey County knew what a crook she really is. I have an interview set up next week with this young lady who actually unfortunately perjured herself by testifying and answering questions from Ramsey County in regards to a funding initiative that happened at African American Family Services, and she feels good and confident about coming forward with this information. So I appreciate the email, and that will be published next week, and maybe we'll be talking about that next Saturday.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's pretty interesting. And I'm just looking at some stuff here. Oh, and we have some more interesting things going on, Mr. Edwards and Mr. Tucker, with the Star and Tribune and the lack of reporting on incidents, not only about the individual getting Willie Navy getting beat in a Brainerd bar, but there seems to be a lot of information missing from the Star and Tribune here locally. More importantly, the City Inc. I had an opportunity to talk to education reporter Corey Mitchell on Friday, and he was unaware about the City Inc.'s being robbed with no forced entry, records taken, washing machine, computers, discs, personal files, just a variety of things were taken out of there. And it's very interesting how they forget that kind of stuff and want to go after some of the little stuff that's going on in town. So with that said, it's going to be pretty interesting to see what pans out here next week. Mr. Edwards?
I don't know what to say on the City Inc. I mean, clearly we have records. My understanding is that some of the Social Security numbers that were heisted, if you will, in a break-in in which there was no forced entry, that comes from the police report. Friends, for our listening audience, there was no forced entry, but that the files that were taken, as well as the disk, hard drives, and et cetera, contained information going back to 2007, and that information included Social Security numbers. I'm told by some elements in our city that the Social Security numbers are being sold on the street now. And it comes at a very interesting time because this is tax return time.
Yes.
And we unfortunately have people who use other folks' identification. It's called identity theft. And you'd be surprised at the amount of money that they get now. Of course, a lot of them get caught, but, when you getting out, I guess, that check for $2,000 or $3,000 or $1,500 or whatever, I guess you don't think about the consequences of what you've done. But the City Inc. Situation, a lot of folks over there that were employees for many years, their Social Security numbers are out there. But, hey, if Corey Mitchell of the Star Tribune says that Star Tribune didn't know about the break-in, even though it was carried by one of the major television stations here in our city, Channel 11, broke the story, they weren't able to move ahead with it because all of the key principals at City Inc., starting with the chair of the board and others, declined to be interviewed, declined responses, and et cetera. But, hey, what the heck? If folks are comfortable with that, I guess they're comfortable with it.
Yeah, and that's one thing, too. I need to interject, Mr. Tucker and Mr. Edwards. A lot of people have sent me emails and given me these calls saying, you know, there's no way that the City Inc. could make between $8 and $10 million in four years or five years. And just for the sake of confirmation and conversation and documentation in the nation, I have in front of me page 13 from the City Inc.'s 2008 990s or their tax return. Okay, on page 13, the city EIN number is 41094252. I'm looking at, in 2004, gifts, grants, contributions, and membership fees received was $3 million. In 2005, $2 million. In 2006, $1.1 million. 2007, $900,000. In 2008, $1 million. It's $3 away from $1 million for a total of $9 million. Okay, this is, and I'm just adding up the grants, gifts, and contributions and membership fees that they received over those years. Now, what's not in this figure is the money they received in 2009 and 2010, which will take them up well past, I think, $13 million. And so there is no accountability at all, because believe me, I've been pressing the buttons and asking people and making phone calls and sending emails. It's like, well, what happened to the almost close to $1 million that the City Inc. received in this fiscal, beginning of this fiscal year? That was to last them till school is out in May or June.
Don, may I just
yes, you can.
Here. This is a continuing example that's been taking place in our country for a number of years. The accommodationists and the so-called civil rights people, who they like to call themselves as civil rights leaders and a spokesperson, come in our community when it's economically feasible for them, when there's some money to be made. As soon as grants and other kinds of things come out that is brought about by the kinds of issues that exist in our community, here they come. And they're coming in here to save the so-called African-American community. And they stay here as long as they're getting paid, as long as they're making money. As soon as the money disappears, and after a period of time when they start putting them under the microscope, they fall out, things happen, records are missing, break-ins, computers are stolen. It is the kind of, then they run back to suburbia, leave the ghetto. They're no longer in the ghetto now. They've lost favor. They got their little money, and they're almost like the president of Egypt. They got the few little thousands of dollars, and they go to the other side of town or go to another state, and they live happily ever after, and they go back and tell everybody that I could not help those uncouthed, unsophisticated African-Americans that lived in the ghetto. And that's where the accommodation is. That's the way they act. They've been doing it for 50 years that I can know of.
Yeah, and Ms. Tucker, it's funny that you say that, because I have someone on the chat line here for in the studio, and he's talking about this Martha Hope Demick, who he says she just dismissed a case against a contracted private security supervisor who left a half a dozen messages claiming to be a police officer. So she didn't even bother to take that to trial or prosecute.
not surprising. By the way, the number... 877-572-4288. We'd like to hear from you. Don't just stay in the chat room. I'd like to hear from you. Here's some questions for Mr. Tucker, Mr. Allen, and myself. One other point on the, and it's, you know, unfortunate that Mr. Corey Mitchell of the Star Tribune, who initially had been assigned to do a story, a more in-depth story on the demise of City Inc., and he chose not to do it, obviously. There is some money that's called reentry money, and I assume there are many who know about what that is, and it has to deal with young men and women who are trying to reenter society, if you will, get themselves straightened around. And apparently there have been
After being incarcerated,
there has been a significant group of young African-Americans who really tried to do some very positive things, have acquired homes and et cetera. Lo and behold, there is a funding that the City Inc. had been receiving, and just in the last couple of weeks, a number of checks, the largest being $13,000 reentry money, if you will. The rest are around the average of $6,000, $7,000, $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 check. I probably $65,000, $70,000, $80,000 checks bounced, and in the course of the checks bouncing, it has put these young men, specifically young men, in some very difficult situations. A couple of individuals are in the process of losing their homes because, you know, you were dependent upon these checks as a part of your contract and obligations and et cetera. And no one is talking about the reentry, though it is our understanding that the folks at the county are ticked because they had asked about that in the early part of January with respect to the reentry money, particularly in that some of the young men had raised some questions about what they thought to be some questionable accounting practices. Now you've got these checks bouncing all over town. People's livelihood, if you will, the future, if you will, are being tampered with. Nobody's saying a word.
Yes.
reentry money. I'd like to hear anybody who may have some thinking on that. We've given you the phone number.
Well,
give us a call. Go ahead.
Let me interject this. Tocqueville, Alexis Tocqueville, did a study on the prison system in the United States at the turn of the century. And it's a very interesting a study that Tocqueville did. And the prison system has always been an Achilles heel of this country. They have always incarcerated more people than any other country has incarcerated. And it's an issue that oftentimes don't get enough press and not looked at. Tocqueville's works are I read them years ago. I have not visited them in the last, you know, maybe 8, 9, 10 years or more. But he speaks to our brutal, this country's brutal handling of prisoners as opposed to other countries. And if the audience who has not read Alexis Tocqueville, it is interesting reading. And the tragedy with Alexis' books is that the many things that he wrote about and the issues that he raised are still issues that are equally as relevant today as it was during the turn of the century when he wrote them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Another additional item we want to touch on, and have Mr. Tucker with us. Article this morning's edition of the paper, headline for our domestic and international audience, deals with a headline in the Minneapolis Star Tribune above the fold, Twin Cities Region section, two sentences in City's quiet war. Now, last summer, when Mr. Allen and myself were talking in terms of war going on the streets of our city as the homicide rates just went off the chart, if you will. I mean, this is a city that a year ago, and 17 months ago, was patting itself on the back because there had only been 19 homicides. We had 19 homicides by February of last year. But the article in this morning's paper talks in terms of two tragic situations. One was a homicide. The other was a shooting of a young African-American who was paralyzed from the waist down. The judge sentenced two individuals, actually three individuals being sentenced, one getting 39 years, another one getting 22 years. and the other one getting life. And the judge, Judge Zimmerman, a white judge, says that there is a war going on in Minneapolis and that he worries and he is fearful for this city. Now, when African-American folks were saying that, it was being dismissed. They were being marginalized. This program, Mr. Allen, was being marginalized and dismissed as stirring, you know, camel dung, if you know what I'm saying, and et cetera. And Mr. Tucker, kind of want to get your feel on that. Do we have a handle on this violence on the street?
Well, the statistics that you quote,
standby caller,
maybe suspects. In that whenever there's an election year, the statistics seem to always favor the party that's in power. So there is some evidence that the statistics that you quote are not valid.
Oh, okay. These are statistics from the FBI now, Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Well, you know, they're a wonderful group, but they did not garner that information on their own. They took the information from data that the Minneapolis Police Department gave them. So I'm not saying or will not say that they deliberately cooked the books. I don't think they did.
Okay.
I think that they got information from sources that they believe to be correct and used that information. I don't think they went out and garnered that information on their own.
Okay. So, we got a caller, Mr. Allen. Let's see if we get there.
We got a caller. Hey, caller, you're live on the air. Who am I speaking with?
Mustafa.
Hey, Mustafa, welcome back. Glad to be there. You know, we were talking about. Go ahead, tell us about what you were talking about in the chat room. We'd love to hear that from your point of view.
Yeah, it was sometime last year, and this guy, they have a security company, private security company. He works that I used to work years ago. And they have a contract with the city and the housing. So I went to visit my brother who lives in one of the public housing high rises.
Yes.
Somebody I know just, you know, decided to harass me. He was not even working at that time there. So I just ignored it, and they trespassed me from there. So many things. But at night he called me like 4 or 5 times, maybe more than that. And he was claiming that he's a police officer, and he will, I will end up in jail, and he will, so many things. And after a couple of days, I contacted the authorities, reported, they filed charges against him. They didn't want to file any charges against him. They told me that's not crime. I prayed for them. And they told me from the officer who responded to the city attorney people, everybody told me that's not crime. Till I went into the mayor's office and told them, you guys send us to jail for even traffic violations every day. So how come this is not crime? And they didn't like that, even though I paid some price and they arrested me. I didn't mind because they contacted the city attorney right away and told them, you got to look into this. So they did some kind of investigation, took copy of the recordings that I had and investigated. And they wanted to tell me that this person is not here. He moved out of state. He doesn't work there. And then I called that office, and he answered the phone. The way they deal with us people, immigrants from Africa like us, they think that we don't know what's going on, and there's some truth in that, how the system works in that, and what are your rights. So I went to the city attorney's office asking the same question, and the lady threatened to you know, contact, to arrest me, you know, for stuff. And then I told her, go ahead and do it, you know. But she never did. Finally, they issued a warranty for that person, but they never. He works not even 1 mile downtown, so they never, you know, went after him or arrested him. So I kept calling them and asking them and writing to them, and finally they said they found him and he came with his lawyer, and they solved the outstanding warranty issue. And And then they one day they wrote to me and they said, we decided to actually week before or 5 days before the court day, they wrote to me and said we dismissed it, this case. I called them and then they said we can't prove it, you know, if that's him or not. And they told me we don't have the technology to analyze the, for his voice and verify that's him.
And so let them know what's going on. The chairman of the Council on Black Minnesotans is also one of the assistant city of Minneapolis attorneys. And Mr. Mustafa had sent me a chat message that said that she had been responsible or involved in dismissing charges against a security supervisor who left a dozen messages on Mr. Mustafa's phone claiming to be a police officer and harassing him. And so that's one of the issues. And then, Mr. Mustafa, why don't you tell me about the tobacco money or the tobacco scam, as you put it.
Tobacco, I've been hearing from those people, Confederation of Somali Communities, years ago. They approached me years ago, somebody who works for them, and they told me, oh, why don't you come with us? You know, we have this program, and you will make money, and, you know, things like that. And I simply told him, I'm not interested in making money that way, and I don't. And he says I'm stupid, and you know, next time we met, he said, I told you, you know, we make money like that all the time. So they are involved with, you know, at least these people have some paperwork. These people who work or claim to represent the Somali community or African immigrant communities, they don't even do that. The things like the paperwork or anything like that. And the funny thing, I think many of you hear about the shooting that happened at Coil Center.
Where now?
A couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the mayor, I was there for some other reasons. I got there a few minutes after the shooting happened. And they told Fox 9 in less than 1 hour that we don't think we will be able to solve this crime because the Somali community they don't want to work with us. You know, it's about 45 minutes after the incident itself, and then I wrote about it some forum, neighborhood forum, and myself, the mayor. I told him he didn't say anything about it. He didn't show up. He didn't. You know, he came next day to the Coil Center, and he said, oh, I don't want to talk about that issue, but he met his people, like this guy I just mentioned, Said Fahia, and he left. He said he didn't want to talk about that. Anyway, I brought up that just to give you an example of the way they deal with us.
Okay.
And
let me
I talked to Martha herself about the case.
Yes.
And they were not interested from day one. From the first day that I reported this.
Let me ask you a quick question here. And I know we're jumping back and forth here, and I have Ms. Tucker and Mr. Edwards on in the background here. But now, the tobacco scam that you wrote here with the dollar signs, what did they want you to do to make money for the tobacco scam in the Somali community?
Well, I never took part of that, but what they wanted me to do is to, you know, to... They get money from somewhere, and they like they're helping people to quit smoking, but they don't do. All they do is a couple of them get together, you know, every now and then, and maybe talk about whatever they want, and then get the names from Focus and Social Security numbers, and you know, fill out the paperwork, and that's it. Check them, and that's all they do.
Yeah, and I would just like to tell our listening audience, especially domestically and locally here in Minneapolis, be very careful what you sign at these community meetings, because these lists that you sign at these community meetings go back in the research to tell folks that we had all these folks participating in this particular incident or in this particular event. Also, Mr. Mustafa, in closing here, I just want to tell you that and let our listening audience know, this is the same thing that the Urban League did in 2008, the Minneapolis Urban League in late 2008 and first quarter 2009, where they were given at first $50 gift certificates or Visa gift cards and Target gift cards. And the first group of people to have that little meeting and talk about tobacco was the social wellness cluster inside the Urban League. So all the employees walked away with a $50 gift card, be it for Target or the Visa gift card. And that's the last I ever heard of it. But I did know that the University of Minnesota, who was involved also at the time, this is before UROC, ended up sending a representative over there by the name of her last name was Allen, Marquita Allen, no relation to me, but and she had to conduct them from then on out because of the heinous corruption that was going away given these cards out. But anyway, Mustafa, thanks for the call and thanks for listening. Anything else in closing?
I also want to mention this house fire case 141. That's related to the canine police dog. The punishment will be there will be more money that and more charges, and you know, and that's something I'm concerned about. I would like to know what you think about. Also, a question that I was proud of before: how can we work together to help our people? We need your help, you know, as a community, you know, because we are overrun by these corrupt people that represent, you know, people who want to corrupt our people socially, you know. I go to volunteer at COEL Center sometimes. So 13-year-old kid asking me other day if who is paying me, and then I said, nobody. So I said, how come white people, they're not paying you to do this? So he grew up that way, you know. He never seen, you know, he couldn't believe that somebody would just volunteer something without getting money from the white people, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. You're the one who left the post on e-democracy about the canine and the law that's going to get ready to be passed or trying to be passed about if you harm a canine, you get more time in jail or charged with it. Is that correct?
Yeah, but so many people, you know, comment on that, but, you know, our people never, you know, I haven't seen some, you know, folks from, you know, African or African American, and so, you know.
Yeah, well, I wanted to comment on it, but eDemocracy has suspended me from commenting on eDemocracy site because, you know, they have guys like Johnny Northside and Megan Goodmanson that say that, oh, that's great. Let's pass that law to have crimes against the dogs. You know, which basically they're saying, yeah, let's, you know, let's go stick them dogs on some black folks, basically. So
sorry to interrupt you, but, you know, the guy who runs the forum is one of, he's very dangerous. He doesn't even hide his spies. You know, he said he want to move to different forum. But he never did. He let other people who were posting comments that he likes, he let them do it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So it's been going on for a while, yeah. You can still post something, you know, since they're doing it too.
Well, I think I'll change my name and go back in, but we'll work on that. But anyway, hey, Mustafa, thanks for calling, and we'll talk about that for a minute here going into the show. Again, our number is 877-572. You're welcome. 4288. Again, that number is 877-572-4288. Mr. Edwards, Mr. Tucker, what do you think about that? A gentleman from
the Tucker, what's your sense on it?
Yeah.
Well, it's a continuing situation. We, back in the 60s, we call there's the, not only we call them accommodationists, but they're opportunists. And the opportunists just see opportunities to come in and make money. They're not here to help or to serve the African-American community. They're here to self-grandize themselves and make as much money as they can at the expense of the African-American community and or poor people, whether they be blue, white, green, or polka dot. And their intentions are fallacious. And we just have a whole community, a large number of people, and I think that group is expanded in the last 20 or 30 years because of the downturn in the economy. They're looking for every place they can and every nook and cranny to make a dollar bill. They're not here to help the African-American community. And although notwithstanding whatever their charters say or whatever their goals or mission statements say in their organization, they're just there to stuff their own pockets. And it's another example of how the accommodationists and our opportunists are continuing to do the same thing.
Yeah. What's your thing on the canine, though? What the because Masafa did ask for our views on the canine.
Yeah, the canine views is that there's a lot of human beings who think more of dogs than they do other human beings.
Mm-hmm.
They will, you know, there was somebody in our country who gave their fortune. Hemsley gave her fortune to her dog or cat. So she owned the Empire State Building.
Right. Okay.
And she gave her fortune to dog or cat.
Gotcha. Just a couple things on that. The canine, there have been court cases where the penalties in Minnesota are pretty harsh for injury to canines working with police. People need to know that. And, of course, this has been escalated by two high-profile incidents involving canines, one in which a canine was killed, the other in which a canine was stabbed and actually paralyzed. And so, you know, Billy Bob has really gotten himself pumped up. The canine is a serious situation. We dealt with that in the PCRC. That's the Police Community Relations Council on behalf of the Justice Department. And maybe I'll touch on that at some other point, some future program. But it was very interesting, the kind of information that we uncovered about in the reverse, how canines are used to attack African-Americans. And apparently, people have forgotten that we had an African-American have both of his testicles bit off here about 5 years ago, a young man who certainly has created significant hardship. His family relocated him here from the Twin Cities. People basically dismissed that, so-called leadership basically dismissed that PCRC, and I know myself hammered that situation and got him attorneys and et cetera, but we've had dogs actually do that, tear people apart, and there's just a number of horrifying stories about that. One other piece on behalf of Mustafa, Don, we failed to point out that actually we initially indicated that $1.8 million had been set aside for the African-American community, $1,031,000 was set aside for the African community, and one of the organizations that Mustafa just spoke to who mm-hmm. approached him to be involved in a criminal activity is on the list of the documents that the legislative auditor has and has apparently under investigation. And maybe at some point you may want to give Mustafa a call back on the private line and encourage him to put together an affidavit and give it to the internal auditor.
Yes, yes. And they had here the Federation of Somalis in Minnesota.
That's right.
Have, you know, over a half $1 million.
That's
on
that. Right.
$1.031 million.
Well,
right,
Don,
there.
You know, one of the things that happens in these processes, and I spent a little time in not to get into my background, sometimes you have to be careful because the political process may not lend the kinds of results you want them to lend. As my dear parents used to say, you don't have to be wrong. If you're wrong, you don't have to lose. If you're right, you don't have to win. You can spend a lot of time with some of these processes because if someone may decide to not to do an audit, they may decide that they don't want to do one, and they may have all kinds of reasons why they don't want to do one. So I don't look for the system to come in and correct itself.
Oh, but Larry, I have to say this now. See, one of the things that drew our attention on point to this was that in 2008, the legislative auditor did do an audit,
mm-hmm.
and they found some serious problems and discrepancies, and they put the Council on Black Minnesotans and their director, the director of the Tobacco Education Fund, Natalie Johnson Lee, on notice. Apparently nothing happened, and ironically, this past Tuesday, we were all kind of laughing amongst ourselves. This past Tuesday, and we haven't really had a chance to talk about that in any detail here, but this past Tuesday, when the police had to be called, not to deal with Martha Holt Demings or et cetera, but had to deal with members of the Black ecumenical community and a situation in which the police had to clear the building. But in the course of that, three representatives of the legislative auditor's office had come to the meeting to remind the council and Mr. Collins and others that they had missed the deadline for providing a necessary report with respect to the legislative auditor's findings of 2008. So, I mean, they did an audit. The problem is that apparently there's some protection, and with the exception apparently of Lucky Rosenbaum, the membership of the Council on Black Minnesotans has been pretty silent. But now there have been audits. In fact, the audit, I think, raised some questions about what Massafa said. And then, like I said, I'm quite sure the legislative auditor would like to talk to Massafa, because this is the kind of activity that's been going on. It's really a sad commentary.
Yes, I agree.
Do you think anything would come of it?
Of what?
Of, you know, say you do an audit, and I think that, you know, I think that you need to go in again and alter the process, and you need to put rules and other kinds of caveats into the receiving of those dollars in order to prevent.
Well, but they do. They do, Larry. They have all kinds of rules. That's what that is the prima facie of the audit of 2008, when the legislative auditor said the following protocols, rules, regulations have not been met. And that's the reason that almost 3 years later, this delegation from legislative auditor's office showed up to have this discussion. Of course, they never got into it because violence broke out in the meeting, and the police had to be called. And so, again, procedures and rules and regulations are in. That can't be tolerated as an excuse by the council, its representatives, heads of its programs, and et cetera. Now, they've got rules and regulations. In fact, Lucky Rosenbaum, who's taken a lot of guff on this, and as he pointed out in a column in the Spokesman Recorder this week, where he just blasted some folks. I just won't get into the name thing. Go get you a copy of the Spokesman Recorder. Lucky Rosenbaum had, in fact, been saying these things, and folks had been dismissing him and marginalizing him. He had been warning folks that these things were happening, and a lot of it was predicated on there were rules and regulations in which, you know, some folks were saying that it's not relevant, we don't need to be concerned about it, to hell with it. So,
notwithstanding all of that, But is it not true, Ron, in your many years out here, and my many years out here, we've seen a blatant disregard for the rules?
Well, let me say this, though. I understand what you're saying, but at some point we have to hope for it, because, see, folks were saying the same thing 3 or 4 years ago. In fact, I take it back further than that. When the Nigerian community got exposed for their involvement in housing fraud and mortgage fraud and et cetera, folks said nothing was going to happen, and we know that things did happen. And then in the last couple of years, with the foreclosure situation, you know, who would have ever thought that Brother Maxwell was going to go to the penitentiary for the amount of time that he went, that he's gone, okay?
Me?
So at some point in time, the system decides to deal with situations, okay? And all that we can do as activists is hope at some point the right thing is done. You know, you cited just minutes ago something that you were taught within your family. Sometimes it's the right thing for the wrong reasons and vice versa and et cetera. And so all we can do is hope. But the fact of the matter is, as Massafa just laid out, there are some terrible deeds being committed against our people. I think Mr. Allen said it on one of his websites. You know, we've got $3 or $4 million worth of anti-smoking money sitting around, and more people smoking now in the black community than ever before. You know, so obviously something ain't working.
Most people don't even know that the money was there, and the individuals that was administering those funds just use it as their little fiefdom to finance whatever little program or project that they wanted to finance. And they we live in an extremely political society, as you both, you and Ron and
Don, the
political society. And when you pushing north, if somebody's always pushing south, and if you only thing we can do is what we're doing now, and I encourage to continue to do that. And I said, you're saying the same thing, although we find some of this malfeasance and corruption. You just got to keep fighting against it and hope for the best. And
well,
I think
Well, there's sunshine. No doubt about it. I mean that's what has to be done. But community, you know, as we said before, community is hurting, and it's hurting badly. And I'm just like we said at the top of this program, I mean, I've been just amazed at doing Black History Month that we've heard so little about these transgressions and et cetera. And, I mean, you know, you got police now being called into meetings, et cetera. You know, Lucky Rosenbaum and others have called for a suspension of the Council on Black Minnesotans. And this is within the purview of the governor and the legislature. And so, you know, to your question, Larry, I mean, you're absolutely correct. Let's see what happens. Let's see if there's anything that tangible comes out of this. Or, you know, is decision being made that criminal activity is okay as long as it only hurts the people it's being committed against, and that is, in this case, Black people. Now, some of us have subscribed to that for a long time, as you know, been bothered by that, that, you know, as long as you're selling dope to Black people, as long as you're stealing from Black people, you're messing up and violating your own, that's okay. We accept that. But if you step upon the safety of the white community, you're going to jail. And, of course, that's why we have such a disproportionate number of African Americans in the penitentiary here in the state of Minnesota. But anyway, what else we got, gentlemen?
Well, I just, you know, with 9 minutes remaining, I'd like to say that, you know, maybe next week's show will be our solution show, where we go into different scenarios that might work that we can share with people. But before I walk away from it, the Council of Black Minnesotans and the Minnesota African American Tobacco Education Network has to be addressed. We have to have full disclosure and find out where every penny of that money went, be it for tobacco prevention, smoking prevention, which I haven't seen anything of in town, or they're giving it to their friends in South Carolina. We also have to look at...
Or in their local church.
Or their local church, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Or African-American Museum. Then we have to look at also the Heritage Fund money, the $250,000 that there's no system of giving a procedure of giving the money out in the first place. And this is something that I've been looking at. It was sent to me by the Legislative Auditor's Office, Sonia Johnson, who actually sent me the guidelines, because I said, again, this is renewing our request to hold the Minnesota Council on Black Minnesotans, or the Council on Black Minnesotans, in receivership for reorganization. Not to shut them down, but just there's something wrong there that folks are going to have
absolutely to
look at. And so,
let me just say in response to that, too, something that Larry said that was interesting. On the website of the Tobacco Network's website, there's an interesting piece there that talks in terms of the history of the network, starting with Miss Washington, who was the first director until Natalie took over on August 1st, 2007. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they said is that in 2001, Larry, that leaders of the Black community were called together to determine who the fiduciary agent would be, and they all decided on the Council on Black Minnesotans. So obviously somewhere is a record, I assume, of that gathering or series of gatherings and the determination to entrust the Council on Black Minnesotans with that responsibility. But, yeah, to take a look at the African American Tobacco Education Network's website, and they talk in splendid terms of how they came together. It was almost like it was Convention Hall in 1776 to put together the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. And they determined that the Council on Black Minnesotans should be the fiduciary agent for all this money that now cannot be accounted for.
Exactly. And Mr. Edwards, one of the things that I'm glad you mentioned the website, because I wasn't going to go there, but I just went back to the website for the Minnesota African American Tobacco Education Network. Now, in its beginning, its origin, it looks like someone really worked on laying this out, because it says you must have magazine advertisements, outdoor advertisements, in-store promotions, racial, ethnic symbols, names,
right,
and events. I mean, it goes into detail about what you're supposed to do with this particular promotion or this community engagement. I hate to say it. Well, no, I don't hate to say it, but the Council on Black Minnesotans and the Minnesota African American Tobacco Education Network, as it stands, has not done any of this.
That's correct.
So,
that's correct. All right. Well, how much time we got left here?
We have 5 minutes left, and we'd like to thank Mr. Tucker for hanging in there with us.
Very appreciate it.
During this
time.
I
always ask this question, and I ask it in jest, but it's as a business person, when will my check come in the mail?
Man, you know, we do this. I do this for granted. I wish it did. No, I got to tell you, we've been approached.
Yeah.
Just a little levity.
Gotcha.
You know, just to say that. I'm never been a person as most people know in this community that have any kind of real of frontal activity. I normally stay in the background, and I've always been for a long time what I call a participant observer. And every once in a while, I'll come and say something. But as a participant observer, just for this so-called Black History Month here, I decided it may not be a bad thing to say a few things, because there's a few things that I just thought that needed to be said.
Absolutely.
And that some of us who have these histories, I like to recommend that people want to really learn about the African-American community and some of the kinds of things that have shaped us. Go read Bobby Baker's autobiography of Bobby Baker. Bobby Baker was Lyndon Johnson's chief of staff. And then go read Lyndon Johnson's autobiography if you want to really understand the politics of our country and how certain things happen. And I think that it will begin to give you some insight as to interesting how decisions are made and what went into those decisions. And there was a lot of civil rights people out there, and that. Megar Edwards is another one I thought was a giant that never got to do that he should have achieved.
No. And for our younger listeners, he was assassinated, brutally murdered outside of his home in Jackson, Mississippi. Yeah.
And Whitney Young also met an untimely
death. Who drowned mysteriously in Liberia, wasn't it? Wasn't in Liberia. He was swimming there off the coast in the Atlantic, and all of a sudden, they didn't know if a stingray or something hit him, and Whitney Young was gone.
Yeah, that was after
he'd gotten in Lyndon Baines Johnson's face about civil rights. Oops. Well, we don't want to talk about that, though.
Yeah,
all right, then.
Thank you, Mr. Tucker. Hey,
Mr.
Tucker, thank you very much, and we'll be talking again real soon.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay. Mr. Edwards, with 2 minutes remaining, we want to remind everybody, if you live in Minneapolis proper, you can tune in tomorrow at 5 p.m. to Black Focus on Channel 17, Minneapolis Television Network. And Mr. Edwards, what is your show about tomorrow? What's the topic?
We continue to take a look at one of the great American tragedies, the massacre at Colfax, Louisiana. We go into even more specific details. And tomorrow's program, we take a long look at the Supreme Court decision of 1876, which actually broke the back of the Reconstruction movement in America, using that case and another case entitled the U.S. versus Reese, a case out of Kentucky, in which African Americans were being disenfranchised and not allowed to vote, a case that emerged in 1871. Court heard it in 1876, as well as the case of the U.S. versus Chalkhanks. Chalkhanks was one of the leaders of the massacre of 150 African Americans or Negroes on the courthouse lawn at Colfax, Louisiana. So, you get a chance, hey, tune in.
Who are you doing? That's Channel 17 in Minneapolis. That's Minneapolis Television Network at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. Well, of course, if you're in Minneapolis, it's going to be in Central Standard Time. But anyway, also don't forget to read Mr. Edwards' weekly column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. Pick one up at a newsstand. It's free of charge. Advertisers support it. One of Minnesota's oldest black businesses and the oldest black newspapers in the United States, second only to the Jewish World. We appreciate you tuning in today and listening to On Point with me, Don Allen, and my co-host and mentor, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, 58 seconds left. Want to say anything?
No, other than we will be concentrating for the remainder of this month on aspects of Black history, and we'll be bringing you additional stories like Colfax, like Tulsa, and we're going to certainly at the end of the month, as a final talk in terms of Duluth, Minnesota. Nobody likes to talk about Duluth, Don.
Oh, no, they don't. No, they don't. And with 36 seconds left, we're going to go out here with a song by Miss Nina Simone.
All right, then, my lady. Take care. Bye-bye.
The name of this tune is Mississippi Goddamn. And I mean every word of it. Alabama's gotten me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about Mississippi Goddamn. Alabama's gotten me